The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Now, the pager attacks in Lebanon have received widespread condemnation around the world after thousands of injuries were confirmed and the death toll rises. An explosion of walkie-talkies killed 20 people and injured 450 people, according to Lebanon's health ministry. So could this lead to further violence in the near future? I'm delighted to be joined by Tom Clonan, independent senator, retired army officer and former lecturer at TU Dublin. Tom, thanks a million for joining me on The Last Word. So listen, what is the significance of using things like pagers and walkie-talkies? I mean, is it designed to strike, to use this word, terror into its victims, even more fear?
Yeah, it's a coordinated terrorist attack. And the reason why I use the word terrorist is because legally, under the Geneva Convention and the laws of armed conflict, you cannot use everyday items for the tasks of living. You can't use them as booby traps or improvised explosive devices. It's considered an unlawful weaponization of everyday objects and would be considered basically a war crime. So now the thing here is that the scale and the level of penetration of Hezbollah's pager network and subsequently then walkie-talkies suggests that it wasn't a terrorist organization that launched this attack, but a state actor. So you'd have to have the resources of the state really to launch such a kind of a coordinated and as I said, widespread attack. And that, you know, the suggestion would be then that that's Israel and Mossad. That's where we're at. Now, it happened after a statement on Monday by Benjamin Netanyahu that he was going to expand his war aims to Lebanon. So for the listeners, Lebanon is to the north of Israel. It's their northern neighbor. And since October 7th, Hezbollah, which is a huge Islamic resistance, it's essentially an army, a proper, fully equipped, trained and effective army. They've been firing missiles into northern Israel across the border, thousands and thousands of missiles continuously since October the 7th. And Sheikh Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, said, the reason why I'm doing this is because Israel is attacking Hamas and we are linked with Hamas. You know, we're going to share their resistance to Israel's kind of genocidal attacks in Gaza. Now, what's happened is that Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, his defense minister, appear to have decided that the operation in Gaza has reached a stage, it's kind of in its end stage or its final stage. And that's, again, for the listeners, Gaza is kind of down further south and to the west. So it would appear to be the case that they're opening up a second front to the north. And this is the first, if you like, salvo in a threat to deal with Hezbollah militarily. So Yoav Gallant on Monday also said that he was fed up with Hezbollah. They couldn't negotiate with them. They wouldn't stop firing the missiles. They want 100,000 Israeli citizens who've been displaced. They want to get them back into their homes, villages and settlements in northern Israel, places like Kiryat Shemona and in and around Galilee and Tiberias. They want to get them back. And they say to do that, they're going to deal with Hezbollah militarily. So that was Monday. Tuesday, you had the pager attacks. Wednesday, the Motorola radio and other electronic devices, and we'll see what happens in the next 48 hours. It could be a precursor to a ground invasion, or it could be an attempt to catch Hezbollah's attention and say, stop firing missiles at us. But the risk of escalation is huge. They injured the Iranian ambassador to Beirut. He had one of the pagers. Questions might be asked what he was doing with a Hezbollah pager, but we know that Iran does back Hezbollah. They provide them with the missiles, the weapons, the equipment, the money.
Yeah.
So there's a risk then of an escalation with Iran.
Yeah. Tom, what does Netanyahu want? And further to that question, is it right that we tend to conflate Israel and Netanyahu as the same thing when we're having a discussion? But would it be better to not conflate them? Would it be better to separate them? I mean, you see the extent of protests by Israelis themselves in Israel. And it seems that Netanyahu is, you know, a rogue player almost here. So what does he want? And first of all, would you agree with what I say there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't associate all Americans with Donald Trump.
Mm.
And I know it's not politically correct to say it, but I don't equate all Russians with Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm.
Netanyahu is, like, in my opinion, like Putin, like Hamas, like he's a toxic leader. It's toxic leadership. And he wants to prolong the war in order to ensure his own political survival, mm-hmm. so that he doesn't face criminal trial and possibly imprisonment. He also wants to involve the United States in this conflict. So there's a risk here. The timeline of an assault on Lebanon aligns perfectly with the run-up to the US presidential election. Netanyahu may be concerned that Kamala Harris would be elected. And while she has been supportive of Israel's operations in Gaza, you know, from a logistical perspective, providing with weapons and ammunition, she has also said that the United States favors a two-state solution, and they've been pressuring the Israelis to, you know, row back on their really, really, I would use the word genocidal assaults in Gaza. So the Americans have two aircraft carrier groups in the eastern Mediterranean, in around Cyprus, Beirut, down the Lebanese coast. And they do have what's called a Marine Expeditionary Force. So it's a large number of ground troops that are ready to go ashore. Because Hezbollah is not Hamas. If the Israelis go across the border, I think they'll in what's called the exchange ratio, they'll suffer a lot of casualties and they'll get bogged down. It'll lead to a confrontation with Iran, because since the American occupation of Iraq, the Iranians now enjoy a land corridor from Tehran through Baghdad, through Damascus in Syria, right across to Beirut and Sheikh Nasrallah. So for the first time in decades, in fact, I think the first time ever, Iran now has a continuous land corridor right up to the border with Israel. So the pagers then... you know, it was a very, very provocative attack. It sent a message certainly to Hezbollah, but I think it was so provocative and so indiscriminate. I don't think it's going to serve Israel well, either diplomatically or militarily.
Do you think it is a significant ratcheting up of the conflict? I mean, do you see it as a step significantly closer to a completely nightmare scenario of a regional war?
Yeah, I mean, when you think of what they did, so... Again, for the listeners, high explosives is a really stable substance. It's like putty or plasticine. You could eat a small bit of it. It won't detonate. It won't do you any harm. You can mold it into any shape you like. And again, for people to understand, like a piece of high explosives the size of a cigarette packet, if you put it under a car, it would completely destroy it. And you would probably need forensics to tell you what kind of a car that was. So they put about 1 to 2 ounces of this high explosives into the pagers at some point, probably molded it and heated it up, baked it into the shape of a component part, and then attached it to the power source. Now, whilst these are small devices, the injuries they would inflict are, you know, horrific soft tissue injuries. We've seen pictures online of, you know, catastrophic injuries around the buttocks, the groin area, the abdomen, the head, the face, the eyes, fingers separated. And you think of a pager or a walkie-talkie, you know, you're holding it up to your head or you have it in your pocket or on your waistband. So I think that whilst these explosive charges were small, the attack was really savage. And it's kind of like something off Black Mirror. It has taken us to a whole new level where, you know, people are looking at their electronic devices, even things like solar panels, and worried that there may be explosives implanted within them. Now, and I think that, you know, if that has come from Israel, from a state, it sends a message to the Arab street that there are no rules.
Yeah, Tom, this is the way you've even described it there, that is a terrorist attack. I know you've used the word terrorist there. But why don't people generally, why don't the media at large describe it as a terrorist attack? Why don't they use that word? I mean, it is a terrorist attack. It's indiscriminate. It does not know what civilian casualties they're going to be or how many children are going to be killed.
Well, I don't mean to sound unpleasant, but the media, particularly here, rely to a great extent on experts, inverted commas, from UK or US or Middle East think tanks, and they would have very often they're paid for by governments. Like, for example, Chatham House in the UK is partially paid for by the British government. And they would have a particular view or perspective that might inhibit them from using words like terrorism or war crime against their allies in Israel. And the other thing as well is, there's a reluctance amongst journalists sometimes to use the language because they're not familiar perhaps with the vernacular. You know, agricultural correspondents know the difference between a cow and a pig. Fashion correspondents would know the difference between Prada and Gucci. But very often war correspondents or people who are tasked with these duties, they don't know the difference between what's legal or illegal, what's, you know, the difference between an artillery system or a armoured system. And the unlawful use of weapons is also something that they're not familiar with. And it's not their fault. It's just, I think it's for a combination of all of those reasons. Mm. But you said earlier, you know, drawing a distinction between Israelis and Netanyahu. Like, I served in Lebanon, both the Israelis and Hezbollah tried to kill us. You know, 50% of our casualties were inflicted by Hezbollah, 50% by the Israeli military. And Private Sean Rooney was murdered by Hezbollah Christmas 12 months ago. So I don't equate them, though, with the Lebanese people. And I don't equate the IDF or Netanyahu with the Israelis. But a really interesting conversation I had with a previous Israeli ambassador to Ireland was, she'd said to me, from the foundation of Israel, they never once visited any retribution or retaliation against Germany. And they opened up formal diplomatic relations with Germany as soon as they could. And they've had a great relationship with them. And they say that's because we can distinguish between Germans and Nazis.
Yes.
But what's happening at the moment is that Netanyahu and his followers do not distinguish between Palestinians and Hamas. And they don't distinguish between ordinary Lebanese citizens and Hezbollah.
No.
And I think that's where the danger is. And that's why we've seen such high, civilian casualties. And really, it's racism. It's ethno-nationalistic, where you have Yoav Gallant, the defense minister, call, you know, Palestinians human animals. I mean, you and I are old enough to think that we would never have heard that kind of language.
Yeah.
On the world stage. So
absolutely.
The risk of escalation is there, unfortunately.
Okay. Tom Clonan, Senator Tom Clonan, thank you very much for joining me on The Last Word.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.